What's up, guys? Welcome to Salt Company. My name's David. We are continuing through our study of 1 Corinthians. If you got a Bible, pull it out. 1 Corinthians 7. Guys, how about that drummer tonight, right? Yeah, you guys know Dana? So Dana is from Ames. He's one of those people. So they're amongst us tonight, okay? No, he's going to go and he's going to help plant Story Hill Church down in Lawrence, Kansas. It's awesome. They're kind of making their rounds, coming to some of the church plants, kind of seeing how we do stuff. So, you know, make him think that this is the best salt company ever, guys. Even lie about it if you have to. All right, 1 Corinthians 7. Here's kind of where we're going tonight. Here's something that I think everyone deals with, something that all of us to one degree or another deal with. It's circumstances, right? Circumstances of life, where you're at, what you're doing, like if you have a job, if you're single, if you're married. Here's one thing that's really interesting. People genuinely think, and this is like universal, almost everyone thinks this, that basically your gap between kind of where you're at now and what will make you like happy, what will make you fulfilled, what will make you like a full person. Like we all have a vision of like what we need to get to actually like really be living life, right? And most of us think it's like, is this a little bit of change, a little bit of a difference, a little bit of like something else. And so some of you are in the room and you're single and you're like, man, if I could just get married, like then it'd be awesome. Or some of you guys are married and you're like, man, if I could just be single again, like that would be awesome. I'm kidding, guys, I'm kidding. But no, I mean, really, like we have this. Like whatever it is in your life, the grass is always greener on the other side. And Paul wants to talk about this. He actually wants to talk about kind of this reality that the gospel comes to you, it comes to you in circumstances. And what the gospel does is actually, it doesn't call you out of those circumstances, like some kind of health, wealth, prosperity gospel, like, hey, you're single now, but man, just give Jesus a chance and he's gonna bring you the husband of your dreams, right? Like, that's not what Christianity promises. It doesn't promise to take you out of your circumstances, but it promises to give you a meaning, a dignity, and a purpose in the current life you have that nothing else can touch. And he wants to get specific, and so he's gonna talk about marriage, he's gonna talk about singleness, and then he's gonna talk about the call of the gospel over all of our life. But I wanna just start here in the beginning of chapter 7, and I wanna talk about the dignity of marriage. So this is how the text starts. Paul, he is talking to them about something that they wrote him. So he says this, "Now, concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman." Now, just really quick. So he is kind of responding. They've had this kind of correspondence. So he's responding to them. And he says, about what you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. So now he's basically doing the same thing as last week, where he basically quotes something like, hey, you guys are kind of saying this. This is kind of a phrase that's out there. And I'm going to respond to that. And this phrase is, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. And basically just this means that like not having sex is like a really good thing. Like sex is actually almost like a debased kind of vile thing, kind of period, whether it's marriage or anything, just sex isn't really good. So it's good actually not to have sex at all. And so he says, okay, that's a phrase, sure. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to her wife her conjugal rights, just like her sexual rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Okay, what's going on here? Well, last week we were talking about one of the issues in this church of Corinth is that they have made this distinction, this kind of artificial false distinction between the physical world and the spiritual world, right? Physical bodies, material things, and kind of the heart, the soul, the spiritual, and they've kind of come to think that the body, the physical body, is this kind of earthly, lowly thing. And so because of that, last week we talked about they're beginning to just take this kind of freedom to live sexually immoral lives, right? Because, you know, the body, it's this earthly, lowly thing. It doesn't really matter what we do with it. The body has sexual desires, and so it's not really a big deal how we satisfy those because it's just the body. What really matters is the spiritual realm. And right last week, we heard Paul, he says, no, that's not actually true. Your body, your physical body, is actually part of who you are. And your physical body is actually part of what God is restoring and redeeming through his work on the cross. And so if that's one side of the coin, of this kind of mistake of separating the physical from the spiritual, then the other side of the coin is that they have made physical intimacy and actually sexuality as a whole. They've kind of started to view this as like a negative thing. They're viewing this as kind of this vile, worldly, debased thing. And they've kind of come to this conclusion because, right, they've separated the physical from the spiritual, and they think that the truly spiritual person, the truly holy person, is a celibate person. They don't have sex at all. They don't even have like a romantic relationship. They're single, they're celibate. That's the truly spiritual person. And because of this view, they're actually starting to pursue abstinence in marriage, most likely. Right now, this is like, for us, we're like, what? That's why we want to get married. they're married, and because they have this false view, they're like, we're not gonna have sex. We're not gonna do that. We're gonna kind of pursue abstinence in marriage. And not only that, they're actually considering separating, and they're actually considering like pursuing singleness. Like, if this is what's really good is like spirituality, then maybe we should not be married at all. And Paul says, actually, no, both of these views are wrong, right? One side of the coin, the body doesn't matter, so you can pursue sexual morality. The other side of the coin, the body doesn't matter. It's kind of this low, debased thing. Therefore, don't have sex at all, even if you're married. Paul says, no. No, outside of marriage, we're called to flee from sexual morality, like we talked about last week. But it's not because sex itself is dirty or earthly. No, it's actually the exact opposite reason Paul gives us. No, he says we should take sexual sin seriously because sex isn't just physical. It involves all of us, and it affects all of us, body and soul. So he's saying sex isn't some defiled part of this physical world, but it's a good gift God gave us. And in marriage, it isn't just allowed. Sex is actually commanded for our joy. And this is where the Bible really begins to subvert the culture of this day, because I want you to look at what it says. So it says this, it says, the wife doesn't have authority over her body, her husband does. That's touchy in today's world, but not in that world. Like, when this is written, that's totally normal. Everyone understands that. Like, the woman, she is kind of the sexual property of the husband. That wasn't weird. What's weird is what Paul says in addition to that. He says, this isn't just true for the wife. This is true for the husband as well. No, actually, it is this mutual thing. The husband doesn't have authority over his body or his sexuality either. His wife does. In that day, I mean, if you guys have studied kind of history, you kind of know Greco-Roman society, and you know kind of the sexual culture of the day. But basically, women were more or less, they were basically sexual or procreating property of men. Women were second-class citizens in this culture, in like the truest form. Like, if you were a single woman, you actually didn't have rights even to like buy property or own property. But that wasn't true for men. Even men who were married, they had this kind of radical freedom in society to have sex with whoever they wanted. And at this time in the Roman Empire, you know, almost every man would have a mistress. And the mistress was basically like the person they pursue like passion with. That was kind of the way they talked about it. Like, this is the woman for passion or pleasure. And then, you know, you have prostitutes. And those are for like the daily care of the body. That's like how they would talk about it. Like, those are just for kind of base sexual needs. But then there's also other men. And so men would have sex with other men. That wasn't uncommon in this day. It was actually really normal. And also, men would have sex with young boys. Some of you guys have heard of this. This is the practice of pederasty. And it's basically where an older man would sexually assault and abuse a young boy. And this wasn't rare. It was normal part of society. And then kind of after this long list of people men would have sex with, you had your wife, who was kind of for procreation. Super destructive, super degrading, super abusive society sexually. And here's what's true. The Bible isn't blind to this imbalance that exists in the world between men and women when it comes to role or when it comes to like equality, when it comes to power. It's not blind to that, right? It doesn't just look out at the world and say, oh, everything's fine, there's no oppression going on. No, actually, the Bible always speaks into culture. And actually, and it speaks specifically to maleness and femaleness, and it always recognizes that traditional society, there is this imbalance where men have this powerful role and women are kind of oppressed underneath this power of men. And every single time the Bible ever speaks into society, it always speaks on behalf of women's rights, always. Even the text in the Old Testament that we read today and we say, wow, this is like really degrading to women, it wasn't back then. The Bible's always been on the cutting edge of women's rights, freedom for women who generally are oppressed by men. So the Bible's not blind to this. It understands it. And like today, sex plays a role in the imbalance, right? Sex is part of the problem. But I want you to look at the solution that the Bible gives. It's different than kind of what we're currently trying to do today. The solution isn't to give women the same kind of complete freedom, complete autonomy over their body and their sexuality like men had. Right, we're going to make them equal by giving them both complete freedom and autonomy. No, but it's actually the solution is to put men and women into mutual submission to one another. Really interesting and really counter to kind of what we're doing today to try to alleviate this abuse that we see. In marriage, the Bible says that a husband's sexuality is no longer actually his own. He doesn't own it. And actually it says he doesn't even own his own body, but actually those things now belong, they kind of come under submission of his wife and his wife's authority. And it's the same exact thing with a wife. A wife's sexuality is not her own, but her sexuality and her body now belong to her husband. And so he's kind of giving this specific kind of wisdom, this specific teaching, but he's going to talk a lot more. He talks a lot about this, like all through 1 Corinthians 7. We don't have time to get to all this, but he's basically saying, hey, if you're married, don't try to like become unmarried. Like don't get divorced, like stay married. Or, you know, these people are trying to pursue like abstinence in marriage, and you're saying, no, don't do that. Like the reason you don't do that, one is because it's not actually a holier life or like a higher level of spirituality. But the reason you shouldn't do that also is because you're not actually in control of your own sexuality anymore. No, you're married. That person, they have the authority over your body now. You've given that up and becoming one flesh. It's not just you anymore, it's us. And there's this mutual submission that's going on. And so he's talking about marriage, and he's speaking into this, and he's basically saying this: marriage is good, marriage is beautiful. And he talks about sex. He says it's a wonderful gift of God that husbands and wives are called to submit to one another in. And what Paul's about to do here is actually really amazing, because he's been with us last week. We talked a lot about sex, and the text talked a lot about sex. And in the past two chapters, Paul has basically presented marriage to us as this profound, mysterious, one flesh union that kind of, it's mysterious. Like we don't really understand what's going on. We just know it's really profound, it's really deep, it's really spiritual. And at the same time, he's given us the highest view of sex that the world has yet seen. No one's kind of seen sex with as high of a view that Paul has yet in the world. And now he's going to do something amazing, because he's going to say that because of what the gospel has given us, you don't actually need either one. You don't need marriage, and you don't need sex. The second thing he wants to talk to us about is the value of singleness. The value of singleness. Now, before we talk about this, I want you to understand how radical what Paul is about to say is. In this society, once again, we're kind of coming to the cultural context of 1 Corinthians, marriage was everything. It was everything. It was of absolute importance. It led to inheritance. It solidified your position in your family, in society. If you didn't get married, it wasn't just an indictment against you. Right? Sometimes we feel this. We feel like, well, if I don't find someone, maybe there's like a problem with me, or I don't know. But it's not just like it was an indictment against you. No, if you didn't get married in this society, it was a blight against your whole family, your entire social world. It was a really, really big deal. It was literally if you didn't attain full status as a person. And it's into this culture that Paul says this in verse 6. It's stunning. He says, now, as a concession, not a command, so he's saying, I'm just thinking, this is my opinion on this. I wish that all were as I myself am. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now, I know that's not that, maybe that weird for us, but I'm saying, in this culture, that makes no sense at all. It is good for unmarried people to remain unmarried. Are you kidding me? No, we don't have any status in culture. We don't have any economic advantage. We're like, if you're a single woman in that society, you're a prostitute, period. Like, it's good, like that doesn't seem like a good thing to not have a husband. And if you're widowed, you should just remain single. This doesn't make any sense. But he says, no, I'm saying that. I think you should remain single as I am. And he kind of explains it a little bit further in 32. He says this. He says, I want you to be free from anxieties. That's why I'm saying this. Okay, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man, he's anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man, he is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. And his interests, they're divided. And the unmarried or the betrothed woman, betrothed is just like, it's kind of like an early form of engagement. The unmarried or the betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, meaning like, okay, you've kind of made this promise and you feel like you need to go through with it to get married to this person, and if his passions are strong and it has to be, then let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity, but having his desire, meaning his sexual desire, under control, and has determined in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, meaning like betrothed but not married, he will do well. So then, he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. There's so much in here that I think we need to learn. And I know it's a little bit confusing on first reading, but there's so much in here. One of the very first things you see that's really interesting is singleness isn't a curse. It's not a curse. It's actually a gift. Like, it's the opposite of that. Like, he's writing to these people and he's saying, this is actually something that isn't just neutral. It's actually a gift. And for a lot of you, like, this idea is really funny. Like, the idea of singleness being a gift is like the gift that you don't want, right? You're like, thanks for that. It's like you wake up Christmas morning and you like come downstairs, your brother's like opening presents and it's like awesome. And you're like, oh, this is so cool. He's like opens it up and it's like an Xbox. And you're like, oh my gosh, an Xbox. Like, what am I gonna get? And you open it up and it's like, it's a purple sweater. Like, that's what I got. And you feel that way. Like, a lot of you feel that way. Or it's like a box of crayons. I don't know, if you're a sweater person, maybe that's, no one really likes crayons anymore. No, Paul's saying this. He's saying, genuinely, I wish that all of you could be as I am. And he means single. He means single. And he's saying, I wish that were true, because he knows it can't be. Why? Because he says singleness, it's a spiritual gift. It's like charisma. It's the same word that he uses for all the different spiritual gifts in this letter. And actually, it's the same kind of phrase that he uses when he's going to talk later. And he's going to say, man, I wish all of you had the gift of prophecy. I wish all of you could speak more in tongues and healings. I wish more of you had the gift of teaching. He's like, I want spiritual gifts to come to you. And that same idea is exactly what he says here. I wish all of you could be single like I am. He doesn't mean like, I want my singles Bible study to be bigger. He's like, seriously, this is actually an amazing and incredible gift. It is. It's amazing. And it's incredible. And it's actually something that the church really desperately needs. Do you know that some of the most incredible missionaries that the world has ever seen were single? They weren't married. They weren't married. Some of the people who've done the most amazing things for the kingdom of God, they weren't married people. They were single people. Apostle Paul, the guy who wrote this letter, he would have never been able to do what he was able to do if he was a married man. Never. No way. No way. You know how many times I was shipwrecked? How many times I was beat? No way. No, he would have never been able to share the gospel, plant the churches like he did if he was married. David Brainerd, missionary to Native Americans. His story, it was short. He was an unmarried guy, but his story of going to the Native Americans, actually it spurred hundreds and hundreds of missionaries to go overseas. Gladys Aylward, if you guys haven't read about her, she's awesome. Spent 16 years in China, one of the main people to actually kind of stop this practice of foot binding in China, did some amazing things. Amy Carmichael, 55 years in India, never came home once. These are single people who were not viewing their singleness as this kind of curse or this kind of like, well, I'm single now, but maybe eventually something better will happen to me. Or maybe eventually I'll get married or I'll have someone. No, they view their singleness and they say, this is a gift I can use for the gospel to spread it. And some of you, you're in this room and you think the complete opposite of your singleness. You are terrified by the idea that you might not get married. You are terrified. You cannot imagine a world where you end up single. You can't imagine a future where you end up not having sex. You can't imagine a world where you don't have kids and a family. And I think that the reason you think that is because you think that if you don't have these things, you're not going to have a full and complete life. Like you've bought the lie that culture has sold you that relationships, romantic relationships, and sex, those are core and fundamental to what it means to be a human. And I just want to say, like, really clearly, that's just not true. It's absolutely not true. Now, what the gospel does is it comes into our circumstances, our situations, right? Our marriage or our singleness, and it makes us a whole and complete person exactly as we are. It doesn't come and say, well, I'm going to give you a better circumstance. No, it comes to where you are and it makes you whole, complete, full. Exactly are as you are. After you have Christ, there isn't anything else you need. There isn't anything else you need. And some of you guys, you've bought this lie. Like, well, if I don't get married, then I will always be lonely. Like, there's like loneliness in you now and you think that marriage is like the full solution to that. And here's what I would say, like, marriage does help that a little bit, but some of the most lonely people in the entire world are married. Marriage doesn't solve loneliness. Jesus solves loneliness. You getting married, you might lie next to that person in bed at night, and you might feel a distance between you that is way more isolating and makes you feel way more alone than anything you ever experienced in your life as a single person. No, marriage doesn't solve loneliness. Or some of you, you might think this, well, if I don't get married, if I don't find someone, I'm never going to be able to experience the joy of family. Well, that's not true either. That's why Jesus gave you the church. This is the family of God. You actually already have a family where you have a role and you're needed and you're wanted. You're in the family of God already. But here's where I think a lot of us believe this. It's that if I don't have sex, then I will be missing out on part of the human experience. Like if I don't have sex, like something fundamental to what it means to be human, I don't get to participate in that. That's not true at all. It's not true at all. Here's why. The most real, the most satisfied, the most perfect human being to ever live never had sex. Right? Jesus was single. Super single. Okay? He lived his entire life without experiencing sex. And you know what's true? He was far happier and he was far more fulfilled in his humanity than any one of us have ever been. And some of you, you think, well, okay, well, that's fair. I mean, Jesus is God. So like he didn't want sex like I do. Like that's the reason I'm really like incomplete. No, actually, Hebrews tells us that Jesus experienced all the same kinds of temptation that you do, yet without sin. No, he was tempted towards sexual temptation in every way that those of us in the room are, yet he didn't sin. And he didn't even have a romantic relationship. Why? He didn't need it. He didn't need it. No, he had a fulfilling and incredible relationship with his Father. He had fulfilling and amazing relationships with all the men and women around him. And he had a mission and a purpose that filled all of his life with meaning. So he didn't have to go out in the world and try to find someone else to give him purpose and meaning because he already had it. Guys, just a couple points. Jesus, fullest expression of what it means to be human, no sex, okay? The new heavens and the new earth, right? This is the final place that all of our humanity finds its fulfillment and consummation. There's no sex there. There's no sex in heaven. Some of you are like, then I don't want to go. No, what it's saying is that sex, like so many good things in this world, they are pictures that point us to a greater reality. Like it's a pointer, and it's saying something better than this is coming. You know, Lewis talks about it like this. He's like, you know, people that struggle with this idea that there's no sex in heaven are like talking with little kids who, like, you're explaining sex to them and sex doesn't involve chocolate. And so they're like, I don't want anything to do with it. And you're like, chocolate's great. Like, sex is better. And it's basically saying the same thing. He's like, hey, actually, no, sex is great, but actually heaven is the fuller place of what sex is pointing to. So this is what he's saying. It's beautiful. Sex is beautiful. It's good for those who are called to it in marriage, but like so many good, beautiful things in life, they're meant to point us forward to something more real, something more true. And the reason that Paul says that singleness is actually completely viable, it's completely good, and it is a full way to experience human life is because that more real, more true thing, the gospel's already given it to you. You already have it. It's in the call of the gospel. This is the last thing that I want to show you guys. I know we're kind of jumping around a lot, but this is what he says in verse 17. He kind of gets a brass tack. He's like, okay, this is what I'm trying to talk to you guys about. He says this, only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Then let him not seek to remove the marks of his circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision, for neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. And then in 29, he kind of continues this. He says, this is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none. I don't know what that means exactly, I'll be honest. I think it means I play more poker, but let those who have wives live as though they had none. Let those who mourn as though they were not mourning. Let those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing. Those who are busy as though, those who buy as though they had no goods. Those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. Why? For the present form of this world is passing away. See, what he's saying is what the gospel does is it comes to you as you are. No matter what circumstances you are in, whether you are married, dating, single, rich, poor, you feel happy or you feel sad, no matter who you are, what situation you're in, the gospel, it infuses your life with so much purpose and so much meaning that your actual situation doesn't matter at all anymore. It stops being relevant. He isn't saying you have to stay in the same situation, like don't get married. Don't do that. No, that's not what he's saying. He's just saying it doesn't matter anymore. You don't need to try to change your situation. What he's saying, he kind of explains it in verse 21. He says this, were you a bondservant when you were called? Like a kind of an indentured servant in Roman times? It's like a really low-tier employee. Were you a bondservant when called? Don't be concerned about it. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself the opportunity. For he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freed man of the Lord. Likewise, he who was free when called is a bondservant of Christ, for you were bought with a price. Do not become bondservants of men. So brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let them there remain with God. What is he saying? He's saying, are you a free person in society? Yeah, don't worry about it, because now actually you're a slave of Christ. Are you kind of a slave, kind of this low-level, like kind of base employee in society? Don't worry about it, because in Christ you have all the rights of a freed man. He's saying it doesn't matter your position in society. The gospel levels all of you out, and it gives you all the exact same status and call on your life. He's saying, are you at the bottom of the corporate ladder? Don't climb it. Don't climb it. Are you trying? Are you like the only one in your family that isn't bringing someone home for Christmas? Don't try to go find someone to start dating. Do you feel like there is something else in your life that would make you more happy? Don't try to go and get it. Do you feel like living in another state or another country would satisfy your longing for adventure? Don't move. Stay as you are. Why? Because the appointed time has grown very short. The present form of this world is passing away. What the text is saying is that no matter who you are, every person, man or woman, married or single, boss or employee, indentured servant or master of the house, whatever your situation, the gospel breathes the deepest possible purpose and meaning into your life. The gospel gives your life in your unique situations that you're in right now the most meaning possible. Why? Well, it is because what the gospel does is it makes you a child of God. A child of God. The fullness of this gospel, right? We can't get into it, but just some points is that he has chosen you. He's chosen you. He's purchased you with his blood. He is preparing for you an eternal kingdom where sin and evil and death are no more, while all the good and beautiful things in this world will one day find their consummation. And this is the kingdom to which you are called. And he says, this kingdom, it is coming quickly. This world, these circumstances, the position you have right now, it's about to be gone. And it's about to be replaced with this kingdom that is breaking into our world. What he's saying is this. He's saying your current life, your current reality, it is being washed and bathed in the glory of that future reality. It's like he's looking around Iowa and he's like, guys, like, these hills, like these kind of rolling hills, like I'm telling you, in the blink of an eye, in a flash, these hills are going to be more majestic and more haunting than the shark tooth peaks of Fitzroy and Patagonia. Don't be impressed by that. Don't go after that. In a moment, this place is going to be even better. It means that the church janitor will very soon be living in a mansion that puts even the wealthiest Wall Street executives to shame. It means that the single bachelor who doesn't have a family will soon be standing in the midst of the innumerable sea of God's family. It means that the girl who came to the wedding without a plus one will very soon be standing on the stage in the final ceremony of God and his people. He's saying, that's about to happen. It's about to happen. And so if you want to get married, it's okay. If you want to stay single, great. If you want to move, or you want to get a better job, or any number of things you may want to do in your life, that is all fine and good. But don't think for a moment that any of those changes in your life is going to bring you more purpose and more meaning than you have right now. The gospel has given all of it to you completely. You're not like the world. If you have the gospel, you're not like the world. You're not aimlessly kind of reaching around looking for someone or something to give your life to, striving and working so hard to find some purpose, some mission for your life. No, that's not who you are. You're like an arrow that has been shot from the very bow of God into this world. And wherever God has placed you, that is exactly where he has called you. You don't need to change your life situation in order for your life to overflow with goodness, mercy, love, meaning, joy. You don't have to change any of your circumstances. You don't have to change any of your circumstances to get that. The reason is because Jesus changed his. This King of Glory, he gave up his throne. He gave up joy. He tasted death. He gave up his family and he was forsaken so that no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what situation you're in, he could bring the glory and wonder and riches of his life, and he could place them into yours. So don't think that the grass is greener on the other side. Don't think that there is more meaning out there. Don't think there is more purpose there. But take that gospel meaning, that future hope, that future reality, and let it bathe every single circumstance in your life today. Would you guys pray with me? God, I remember being in college, and I remember just talking with people who were single and talking with people who were super discontent and talking with people who just felt like, gosh, if they could just get to the next thing, if they could just get out of college, if they could just move, if they could just find that person that was like everything in their life, like finally now I won't feel like I'm flailing around. Now I won't feel like I'm kind of just this meaningless place. But God, I ask that you would communicate to people the reality of what you have called them to, that you didn't call them away from their circumstances, but God, that the exact place they're at, your gospel gives them a meaning and a purpose that nothing else in this world can touch. So God, thanks for giving that to us. We didn't have it before you came. But God, you left your home. You left your glory to bring it to us. So God, would we be able to respond to you with worship? In your name, amen.